The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Told you the Clippers were in trouble, and it's not about what Doc had to say about the Clippers being weak emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, whatever you're saying. You know, bad on offense, defense. No, it's not that. It's not, listen, and yes, if Paul George showed up big, they'd probably win. They're probably a little too much. No, this is about the Mavericks. This is about the Dallas Mavericks are real. I'm telling you, my pick preseason was the Clippers. My sleeper pick preseason was the Mavs. They go all the way right now. It's possible. And by the way, you see the dynamism in their backcourt. Forget about Luka for a second. Stephen A. was getting on me today, like, why did Kawhi switch off Luka? Yeah, probably stay with him, but they got a whole bunch of dudes who can punish you. Tim Hardaway Jr. can shoot the lights out. Trey Burke can. Obviously, Seth Curry can. I just named three dudes in the backcourt who can't shoot, who can't play offense. Not really. Tim Hardaway's perimeter defense has gotten better, but none of them are like lockdown defenders. But that's okay. The front court has the defense. Finney Smith and Maxi Kleba. And when he's in, Porzingis. I want to hear about his pick and roll defense. Overall, he completely changes the other team's offense. But Luka Doncic. This is about what the Mavs can do. This dude went for 43, 17, and 13. He just turned 21 years old in February. In a playoff win against the Clippers. And let's not forget, Porzingis didn't play yesterday, obviously, because of the sore right knee. That's the opposite leg from the one with the traumatic injury. But let's not forget, that game one loss for the Mavs was the result of a bad ejection of Porzingis. Didn't deserve. Remember what happened. They swallowed the whistle on one side of the court where he should have scored. They blew the whistle on the other side, consecutive plays, where he had a clean block. They then teed him up for no good reason when he was obviously not happy with the fact that they just cheated him on both ends of the floor. I'm not saying they did it on purpose, but, you know, that's what was the result. And then they teed him up again without good enough cause when he was really just creating separation between Luka and Morris. One of the Clippers' only two wins. It should be 3-1. Because they were winning that game. And insofar as you can control a 5 or 6 point game, controlling it, every time the Clippers would make a run, they'd hold them off. They'd stave them off. And as soon as Porzingis went out, the Clippers jumped to a lead and never looked back. But Luka wasn't having it today. Or last night, rather. Here's what Luka had to say after the game.
I mean, I would say it's different, you know. It was NBA playoff, you know. You have Clippers in the other end. We're an amazing team, which is tough to beat them. And, you know, like I said before, when I hit a shot, you know, the whole team running towards me, that was one of the best feelings ever.
I can imagine. By the way, Kawhi, who I think is the best player in basketball, had a look to win it in regulation and just missed. Luka didn't miss with the game on the line in overtime. 43, 17, and 13. Look, I'd made the comment that Luka was the greatest 20-year-old player in the history of the NBA, or the best, sorry, not the greatest, because Magic at 20 jumped at center against Daryl Dawkins in Game 6 of the Finals without his big. I think Porzingis is good. He didn't have Kareem available, who was the league MVP that year in the regular season. And Magic gave the Sixers 42, 15, and 7 in a Game 6 win in the Finals, not in the first round. So, all right, look. I understand greatness is one thing. Like, let's see Luka continue to do this as the stage gets bigger and bigger, if they can even advance. But best 20-year-old? I know other guys were in college when they were 20. I understand. That's why I'm phrasing it this way. He was the best 20-year-old in the history of the NBA. 20-year-old, yeah. Is he the best 21-year-old? He's in the conversation. But, you know, now you get to a lot of guys who were also really great at 21. He just turned 21. Like, considering this is his age 20, 21 season, might be the best. And then Montrezl Harrell calls him an expletive white boy, right? And a lot of people, I understand, like, we're in a crazy time of for some reason, this idiotic white grievance politics. White people very upset that, among other things, that sometimes the actually aggrieved party, who's been oppressed for 400 years, may have access to a few slang words in the English language that are not socially sanctioned for the oppressed group as much as they are for the group, the oppressor group, right? And for some reason, white people are very upset about this. Ah, why can't we have access to these three slang words? It's not fair. Yeah, but what about the 400 years of oppression? Never mind. We're all even now, and now it's not fair. You know how stupid you have to be to think that? At any rate, sorry. I don't want to make it any ad hominem attacks. Don't call someone stupid for thinking that. Although, there's a huge shaded area in the Venn diagram there. But it is, you know how stupid a comment that is? What a lack of thought you have to put into the subject to say it. Nevertheless, look, you know how many times I've been called a white boy in my life? A million times. It's not an offensive term. Really, what white boy means is you're identifying the person by an identifiable characteristic, which means that there aren't a lot of white boys around, right? White people around. That's why you would identify someone as white boy. And as far as Luka Doncic is concerned, performing on the level that he's performing on in a predominantly black league, African-American league, even as we have an influx of foreign players, among which Luka is counted, nevertheless, he is, in terms of the MVP candidates in basketball, an outlier, a racial outlier, whatever. But so that is just an identification. That's not the offensive term. If anything, but it's not that what Montrez said wasn't offensive. The offensive part was the B.A. white boy. The stuff that came before it is those are fighting words. Them's fighting words. That's what Luka shouldn't be upset. And by the way, it doesn't seem like Luka's sweating any of that. He's like, yeah, the B.A. white boy, that's bad blank white boy. He's just, Luka's a bad dude, man. I mean, and gave him that work. But for those, there's a double standard. Uh-huh. For 400 years, there's one double standard. And then there's a double standard in terms of the access to three or four slang words that the oppressed group is not as socially sanctioned to use as the oppressor group. And then the oppressor group, this is what I mean. It doesn't pay to be white. Everyone calm down. Nevertheless, Montrezl Harrell was in the wrong. Maybe across the line. Not as I said, the white boy part, whatever. It's the B.A. white boy part where it's like, really? You want to say it to that dude? And by the way, before he gave you that work, but he's been giving you work. And Montrezl Harrell handled it. It was like, look, my bad. And Luka, thing about Luka is I don't think he's sweating any of that. Luka, in every year of his life as an advanced basketball player, was always playing. He was a boy playing against men. Then he was a teenager playing against better men, like a higher league. And then he was a 20-year-old and a 21-year-old playing in the best league in the world and came in like he ran the league. That dude is alpha, and he doesn't care about stuff like that, it doesn't seem to me. Even the way he accepted the apology, he's like, yeah, no problem, let's go. And then gave him 43, 17, and 13. Ooh. We've seen some amazing performances in these playoffs, like amazing performances. You know, I said on TV today on First Take that Luka's been the MVP, you know, James Harden. Here are the MVP candidates in the bubble. James Harden, Damian Lillard, Luka Doncic. But let's talk about the MVP candidates in the playoffs. Luka's one of them, certainly. Donovan Mitchell. Good Lord. It's not just that he's putting up gaudy numbers, 57 and 51 in the same series in which his team. I'm sorry, someone said something to my ear. What was that? Repeat. Correct. See, they're trying to develop good habits. That was Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. But there's some more Straight Talk. Look, going into this series, these are two kind of teams, like, especially in a bubble year, boy, either one of these could win the championship, right? But what happened was Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert clearly don't like each other, and maybe it stems from Rudy Gobert giving everyone COVID on purpose. Well, he didn't do it on purpose. He didn't know he had it. Right. But he didn't take it seriously enough. And then to make a joke, he touched all the microphones of the gathered media. And it turned out he had COVID. Look, Rudy Gobert doesn't seem like a bad guy. And he apologized and he can't take it back. And I don't think he did it maliciously. But the whole point about humor in that moment is the more irreverent it seems, the more risque, the more risk it takes, the funnier it's supposed to be. Look at me. I don't have reverence for this sort of thing. Well, guess what happened? You have to have respect for a pandemic. Like, you have to modify your behavior. Tough if you don't like it. I know he didn't get it at the time. He gets it now. But Donovan Mitchell was heated, it seems, about that. He got hot about it. Why not? And because of that lack of chemistry there, or that kind of, I felt like a team like that where its two best players are at odds versus a team like Denver, who has comparable talent, maybe more, because heading into these playoffs, you'd think Jokic is the best player on either team, and had an emerging star in Michael Porter Jr., who was relegated to coming off the bench because they were exploiting him in the pick and roll. You think, well, that team who's found that third star is going to beat Utah. Maybe if Gordon Hayward were both healthy and still on Utah, right? But he's not. And in those circumstances, and it's not like, by the way, Jamal Murray's not answering. Jamal Murray dropped 50. And you can see the stats there on the screen. 50 with 11 and 7. So it's not like Donovan Mitchell's giving you empty calories. He's controlling the game. He said what was most important to him after the game is the 7 dimes, not even the 50 points. Yo, Donovan Mitchell to be up 3-1 on Denver right now with two 50-point games. He's the best player in the playoffs so far. Let me just say it. Of everyone who's played NBA playoff basketball, I'm not saying he's the best player in the NBA. I'm not saying he's been the best player in the bubble. I'm talking about since the playoffs started, the most valuable player in basketball, which, by the way, for everyone who's wondering, can't figure this one out, is the exact same thing as saying the best player. Best and most valuable are synonyms. Is Donovan Mitchell. And I always thought, this is not an original thought of mine, but I have it, before I ever heard or read anyone else say that, I thought it, I'm sure many of you have, that you have a finals of the regular season, and you have a finals, an MVP of the regular season, and you have an MVP of the finals, right? And neither one really gets to the point, because who's the best player in the world? Well, the best player in the regular season, if they're stopped early or they choke in the playoffs or whatever, James Harden, although not this year so far, that's not the best player in basketball. Like LeBron, James Harden, you could have that regular season. KD, you could have that. Steph, you could have that. And then the playoffs, LeBron left, no doubt, I'm the best player in basketball. You know, his play said. However, you might be a finals MVP and you didn't have the best overall playoffs. And that's really what when you want to know who the best player in basketball is, wait till the end of the season, including the finals. So the regular season, playoffs, everything, finals, that'll tell you who the best player in basketball is. And sometimes he doesn't win the finals because his team isn't good enough, but you still have an idea. Over 50% of the teams make the playoffs in the NBA. So the finals, sorry, the best player is never, ever, ever going to come from a non-playoff team. It's the nature of basketball. You have over 50% of the teams make it. You got the best player in the game. You're going to make the playoffs 100% of the time. So wait till the playoffs and then make a determination. At least see what he does in those high leverage games. So this is not the finals, and we're not talking regular season, and I'm not talking bubble. I'm talking about just since the playoffs started. In that small sample size of, I guess it's 4 games now for Donovan Mitchell, he's the best player in the world. And that includes Luka, and that includes Harden, and that includes Lillard. He's up 3-1 on a really good Denver team. And those points he's racking up all matter. Was that loss an OT loss? I've watched so much playoff basketball recently, I don't remember. I think that was an OT loss, wasn't it? The one loss that they had? Donovan Mitchell is insane right now. Regular season, by the way, I think at times he can be a little overrated because he's spectacular to watch. And players like that can rack up counting numbers, high usage players like that. But I thought maybe, in fact, Mitchell is not quite as good. And by the way, this goes for Jamal Murray, too. Maybe they're not yet quite as good. They're on their way there because they're very young. Maybe not quite as good as sometimes the counting numbers say or people think. No. Donovan Mitchell is better than anyone thought. I don't care how high you were on him. This dude has risen his play. It's another level right now. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. So we've had these incredible performances by stars, and I mentioned them. Harden's played great. Luka is just otherworldly. And by the way, Luka's still not a defender. Harden's become a little bit of a defender. Donovan Mitchell's been out of his mind. What about Joel Embiid, who everyone wants to, and I think Embiid got this right. He's like, everyone wants me to be Shaq. The game is not played that way anymore. It's not really possible to have a Shaquille O'Neal. In fact, the guy who's closest to Shaq in this NBA is the Freak. And Antetokounmpo was the closest thing to Shaq, which is why Shaq saw him and said, that's the first guy I say you should take the Superman nickname. And Embiid is not as good as the Freak. But that's partly because the Freak can play a little smaller than Embiid. He can do many of the same things, defend and score and all that, but he can play a little smaller. His handles are better. He's a better passer. He's a more versatile defender. And maybe they're comparable shooters. Here's Joel Embiid after his Sixers were swept by the Gordon Hayward-less Celtics.
Like I said, I don't make the decisions. I'm here in Philly. Whatever happens, happens. You know, I always say that I want to end my career here. And if it happens, good. If it doesn't happen, well, you move on and all that stuff. But I'm here, and I'm going to still try to do my best to bring the championship back to Philly.
Hey, Raj, while I'm getting the hang of this, can you put the straight talk, precise wording on the screen so I can say it? Because I'm about to give you some straight talk.
Put me up. Am I up? You already said it.
Oh, I already said it. But now I'm switching games.
So you don't have to do it every time. You're doing fine, man.
Don't overthink this, Max.
Time,
huh?
No.
I just want to read everyone a text.
No, it's just radio. Something. Today you want to read all of a sudden. Oh, what did I send you?
Well, let me just see. Deliver.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Yes, but it still says straight talk before switching games. So I just switched
games.
The
first
time. Oh, all just right. the
well,
first
time. Not every
time. Yeah. Oh, okay. I got it.
Now you're getting it. You're all right. You're good.
Got it. By the way, you're supposed to ring the bell before you chime in on this show.
Well, not when you invite me in.
Oh, it's
when
just
you invite
when
you
me butted.
In, you just left the door open. Yeah, it's when I interrupt, when I'm just coming over uninvited. You know what I'm saying?
I see. Uninvited guest.
Yes.
There he is. Ooh, that ridiculous headshot.
That's fresh. As soon as you see that, you just think, fresh.
Joel Embiid. Play the sound again, Raj. Let's play it again. I want to react to it fresh. Play it again.
Like I said, I don't make the decisions. I'm here in Philly. Whatever happens, happens. You know, I always say that I want to end my career here. And if it happens, good. If it doesn't happen, well, you move on and all that stuff. But I'm here, and I'm going to still try to do my best to bring the championship back to Philly.
It just doesn't sound like someone who's committed to Philly. And I put myself in Joel Embiid's shoes, it never seems like they have a load management plan for him. In last year's playoffs, Al Horford just burned him, looked so much like his legs were so much fresher, you know, fought the game faster, I thought, because he's a veteran. And one of the reasons I like when Philly got Horford, which turned out to be a disaster, because he can't play next to Embiid, because he can't play the four, who knew, was at least he wouldn't have to face him, you know, against Boston in the playoffs. Because in high-leverage moments, Horford made him look bad. But that's partly because, you know, Embiid comes in, he gets picked third instead of first overall because of the knee. And then you hear about his back. And then you hear, well, so he really can't practice himself into game shape. He can't play himself into it the same way maybe some others can, or maybe has to play himself into that shape rather than working out the same way others can because, you know, he has X number of minutes in his body, right? Where do you want him? You want him on an NBA floor or practicing behind the scenes with those minutes? Because of you know, his physical ailments. So it always seems to me one of the reasons that they have a problem on the road is it looks to me, I'm guessing, I admit, that Embiid is thinking, there seems to be no organizational plan to load manage me. I have to do this myself. So in front of the home crowd, he performs. And on the road, he takes his foot off the gas a little bit. And so does the team. I mean, there's no home road now, really, because of the bubble. But that's always so like, if you're in that position, you're Embiid, you got to be thinking, is this the organization for me? Do they know how to really take care of me and get the best out of me? And then you look at the team they put around him. This dysfunctional situation where, as I said, Adam Silver steps in, not because the process isn't working, but because it is. And you can't have a copycat league where you have 4, 5, 6 teams tanking for 3, 4 years. He says, you got to bring someone in. The problem was they brought in Brian Colangelo, and that was a dumpster fire. So they get rid of Colangelo, they hire Elton Brand, but they make Brand keep half a bunch of Colangelo's staff. Brand couldn't get his own whole new staff. Had to keep some holdovers from Colangelo. So that's no good. And I see what their strategy was before the season. They have, you know, they're going to lose Butler. They foolishly signed Tobias Harris to that deal. Is way too big considering his abilities. Can't play defense and is a nice offensive player, but not a great one, just a nice one. And bringing in Josh Richardson in that deal, like, that was smart. Richardson in a good year shoots just well enough. That's not this year. And he's a good defensive player, and he seemed to be ascending before getting to the Sixers. And they get rid of Redick, who became expensive and had bad transition defense, one of the things that cost the Sixers. You bring in Horford, just going to make it really tough for the opposing team to score, but it was an island of misfit toys. It didn't work. And so if you're Embiid, you can't have a lot of faith in the way things are going right now, particularly when you're like, do they even know how to get the best out of me? All that said, they got swept because they didn't have Ben Simmons. If they have Ben Simmons, maybe they still don't have enough shooting to beat Boston, but maybe they do with Ben Simmons. That is a huge, like, take any, take the second best or tied for the best player on any team off that team. And if they still win a game, you're amazed. Like what Luka just did without Porzingis, that's amazing. And Dallas is a much deeper team than Philadelphia.
Max, the podcast.
Zeke, thank you for calling back. So sorry for that misunderstanding.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, there it is.
No worries at all.
Isaiah, you were a guy talking to Isaiah Thomas, the Hall of Famer. You have to distinguish that nowadays. Isaiah, you were a guy who, as excellent as you were during the regular season, and you were an all-time great, you got better under pressure. And so you're the right guy to ask about this. In my view, Luka's played great. Harden might be getting the monkey off his back in terms of playoff performances. Every year, a little better. This year, so far, so good. We've seen AD step up for the Lakers. But I don't think anyone's been as good, let alone better, than Donovan Mitchell. This dude has lost his mind. Isaiah, 4 games, he has 250-plus point games. The last one in a win against a good Denver team. Who has been the best player in these playoffs so far?
I think you hit it right on the head, Max. You have to, you know, it's definitely a debate between those two in terms of Doncic and Mitchell. Both those guys are playing lights out. Not only are they playing lights out, they're elevating their teammate. They're giving them a belief that they can win, and not only can they win, but they can excel and continue to move on. I thought Donovan had a big moment when he had the 8-second violation that technically could have cost them the basketball game and probably did cost them momentum in the game. His interview afterwards, how he took responsibility for that and then came back and played extremely well the next game, you know, for a lot of players, Max, that is a crushing moment in their playoff berth and their playoff experience in terms of advancing mentally and maturity-wise to the next level. And I thought Donovan handled that moment extremely well. And not only did he handle it well, but he excelled in the pressure of the playoffs.
You know what? There's been so much playoff basketball, Isaiah. I'm already, games are bleeding into each other in my own memory. Was that the 57-point game for Donovan where he had the eight-second violation?
Exactly.
Because the clock was, yeah. already, 2 seconds had already gone, and he thought he had the fresh clock. Yeah, you know what?
And they were up five at that moment.
That's right.
With a chance to extend it to seven or to eight and really, really kill the momentum of Denver. Denver came back and I think hit a three or got a two and one. And then that's when the momentum shifted in that game.
And I love the way he did take responsibility for it, too, after the game, because it wasn't, oh, this is all my fault. You know, some dudes puffed their chest up a little too much, and it's like a humble brag. You know, as the leader of this team, I got to... No, he said, look, no one play decides the game, but that was a bad situation. Like, that didn't help us. I even liked the way, because the way he took responsibility showed me he's not a robot. He's not just spitting out the PC thing he thinks people want to hear. He actually has thought this through and has internalized it and believes it. You're right. And then he comes back and to drop 50 again. And also, as you said, to be a playmaker, getting to the paint, the dribble, the drive and kick and all that stuff, saying he was prouder of his seven assists because he's uplifting the team. He's been incredible so far in these playoffs.
He truly has. And, you know, those of us who, like yourself, who listen to those press conferences at the end of the game, and then we critique, you know, them psychologically in terms of what they're saying, their demeanor, their behavior at the table. To see him act that way during that press conference after he scored 57, but then now I put myself in the former player's head, knowing now what he's getting ready to come back and face against the Nuggets, because the defense is strictly going to be designed to stop you from scoring 50 again.
right. Because who else is their threat, really?
And he comes back and he drops 51.
Right, because who else is their threat, really? This is not a team, I mean, he never really got to play with Gordon Hayward, but this is not a team with a secondary scoring option, you know, who's an all-star. Their second-best player is a defensive guy. And by the way, given the chemistry issues they had coming in, I was thinking, nah, they're not going to beat Denver. But if not for that eight-second violation, right, maybe, the series is already over, and they're up 3-1 on a damn good team where you know, they had a third star emerge, at least on the offensive end, in Michael Porter Jr. It's very impressive. And meantime, coming off last night's game, Luka Doncic, Zeke, turned 21 in February. This dude just gave him Kawhi misses the game winner in regulation. This dude gives him 43, 17, and 13 and hits the game winner? Oh, without Porzingis? This is a problem. The Mavericks, Zeke, I think the Mavericks are a problem. Doncic, when you get Porzingis back healthy, you got Maxi Kleber and Finney Smith. Their front court doesn't score a lot, but they can shoot from distance, and they defend multiple positions, and Kleber blocks shots too to go along with Porzingis. And in the backcourt, you don't have defense really, but you have a whole bunch of dynamic offensive players, including Hardaway Jr., Trey Burke, Zeke, I'm thinking if they're live not only to beat the Clippers, I think if they get past the Clippers, everyone might be in trouble.
You know, Max, I said this last year when the trade was made for Porzingis. I thought that that trade definitely is going to continue to hunt the Knicks for a long time. But at the same time, when you look at Doncic and you look at Porzingis, we have never in all NBA existence seen a duo like this from a size standpoint and from a skill standpoint.
Yeah.
Now let me tell you what I mean. When you look at Jordan and Pippen, Luka and Porzingis are different than Jordan and Pippen. When you look at Shaq and Kobe, they're different than Shaq and Kobe. When you look at Magic and Kareem, they're different than Magic and Kareem. So when you start looking at the uniqueness of these two individuals as players with their combined skill set and size, there's never been a point guard center combination in the NBA like Luka and Porzingis. And I think defenses are going to have a very difficult time adjusting to the uniqueness that they bring to the floor. So, yeah. And I think it's going to take a long time before the league can catch up with this visionary type of play that they're putting forth.
Yeah, you know, the closest thing might have been Jason Kidd and Dirk Nowitzki, but Kidd was past his prime, though it meant he shot from the outside better than he had earlier, but doesn't have Luka's size or scoring ability, and Dirk, better shooter than Porzingis, but shorter and not a rim defender. Like, you're right, it's unique. It hasn't happened before.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Like, while Kidd was an excellent, you know, passer, and, you know, and you got to give Cuban and Don Jr. a lot of credit. You know, because I was with Cuban the day, I was actually sitting with him in Dallas the day that he made the trade or decided to let Nash go to Phoenix. And I was sitting right in his office with him. And at that time, you know, Nash and Dirk were such a good pair. But his vision of what basketball was going to be and what he needed to do as an owner to win a championship, not to satisfy the fan base, he made the right call then in the trade for Porzingis and the trade for Luka, combining those two as a skill set and size that we've never seen in the NBA at this position before like this, is definitely a visionary thinking on Nelly and Cuban's part.
Zeke, I don't know if you're right, but they're telling me I got to go. But when I used to have you as a guest on the Max Kellerman show in New York 10 years plus ago, my producer, Robin Lundberg, who's now on air for Sports Illustrated in front of the camera, you know, used to be on air with me and you know, set you up as a guest and everything. And he made a point on Twitter. That Knicks trade, he made this point yesterday, that the Mavericks may have gotten the three best players in the trade. Porzingis and Hardaway Jr., who's now defending on the perimeter better and shooting, and also he could you know, get his shot, and then Trey Burke. They might have got the best three players in the trade.
It just goes to show you, you know, in the NBA, you know, that patience is a virtue, and you got to be patient enough to really work through the problems, let your young talent develop, and see what they're going to grow into. And if you compare those three guys, which Dallas did, with a superstar who's been a superstar for, you know, probably since he was 14, you know, if you compare those three with Luka, I mean, you got a dynasty in the making. Dallas is definitely, you know, the place to be and to look basketball-wise for the next, you know, 5 to 8 years.
The great Isaiah Thomas, ladies and gentlemen, Hall of Famer and postseason performer, breaking down the postseason on the Max Kellerman Show. Isaiah, really appreciate the time, as always. Hope you come back real soon.
Max, I love you, brother. Congratulations on everything that you're doing, and all of the knowledge that you continue to drop around social justice issues. It doesn't go unnoticed, and the way that you're able to accurately and factually discuss race and class and gender is truly appreciated, brother. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Means a lot coming from you, champ. And you know what? We'll chop it up. Let's get into some social issues next time you come on the show. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for listening to The Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.